We're discussing health and reproductive education on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Local school districts, they have the power to choose or approve curriculum for sex education along with HIV and STD prevention. State law says abstinence is stressed. Parents have the option for their child to opt out of instruction. Join in on sex education in your school, 800-642-1234. Ann Brasowski is on the State Department of Public Instruction's Adolescent Sexual Health Leadership Committee, which supports districts in preventing HIV, STDs, and teen pregnancy. She is an instructor for a program called REAL. It stands for Responsibly Educating Adolescents for Life. That's a comprehensive sex education program in Cedarburg. Ann, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Tricia Wessel here, a developmental psychologist and an associate professor at UW-Milwaukee, also an instructor for the REAL program. Tricia, welcome to you.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning. Tricia, we'll start with you. With the overturning of Roe, how might sexual education change in American schools?
I guess I can't speak completely for all education in the United States, but our hope from a comprehensive program like we have ourselves as an alternative to the Cedarburg School District is that we will have even more information in regards to being medically accurate, being developmentally appropriate, being inclusive and sex positive, so that all of our children and young adults are well informed as to their options when it comes to STIs and contraception.
And what are your thoughts there on reproductive health education, in the wake of Friday's decision, the federal constitutional right to an abortion being ended? What does that mean for health education?
Well, I really think it points to the fact that it's more important than ever for people to have that information about how to prevent unintended pregnancy if they are not ready to be involved in a pregnancy, and sort of have the knowledge and skills to take charge of their own health so they can really be making decisions that are best for themselves. We know that information about birth control is an important way for people to be proactive about their health care. So we need to really make sure that that is provided to as many people in as many ways as possible.
And how did the REAL program start? Take us to this program and its origins.
It was actually started by three parents. They sort of described themselves as three parents sitting around in a basement, kind of talking about how they were going to go about sex education of their own kids. And they were attending some of our local school board meetings. Just they had sort of said, well, we should know what's going on in our district. And at that point, there was the district was looking at its current sex ed curriculum and sort of trying to figure out how to handle that. And there were a series of advisory committees that were set up with local clergy, physicians, teachers, parents, that sort of recommended a very comprehensive approach to sex education, which is what our school district had. Talk about contraception, talk about protection from STDs, how to do that, how to implement that. And that was sort of that process was, or that decision was kind of overturned by a minority of the school board. They dissolved that committee, they reconvened another committee with the same results. And again, that decision of the advisory board was overridden by these members of the school board who selected an abstinence until marriage curriculum. And from there, they kind of said, our schools aren't going to provide the kind of education we know that our kids want and need to have healthy lives now and in the future. And what can we do about that? And from there, it was really a grassroots movement where they just sort of were calling on people who knew people, people who had different levels of expertise. And they developed a core of about 10 to 15 parents who really sort of mapped out a plan forward. And for them, what they found was that there really wasn't much available and that they needed to develop their own program. So I think that's sort of the point at where Tricia and I kind of became involved in this program. I have three kids in the district. Tricia has kids in the district, and we sort of also have this background. So we kind of stepped up and helped in part of that formation process.
Tricia, how has it been as you are involved in the REAL program? What is that like for you? What have you experienced?
Well, it's actually been quite an awesome experience. It's, kind of a double-edged sword. It's unfortunate that our district, chose to go the direction it did to not serve the best needs of its students. But on the alternative, this program that we're offering every year, we get such a great opportunity to see how useful this is to our students. We get excellent questions from our seventh, eighth, and ninth graders about so many different aspects of their sexuality. And so it really reinforces, I think, to all of us as educators, why we're doing this, why we're volunteering our time to make sure that this program is available. And then parents, every year we start getting emails right around the time this, school starts, asking, when will our program take place? Can their child get involved? It's exciting to see how much parents and families really want to make sure that their children are prepared.
Talking about sex ed with two instructors for a Cedarburg program aimed at teaching teens and filling in the gaps where schools stop with the education. Tricia Wessel and Bursowski, they're with us. You can join in 800-642-1234. And people might be listening and wondering the nuts and bolts for the REAL program. Like, where do you hold it? How often do you teach and how that works? Can you kind of explain that those types of aspects of it?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. And that's sort of been one of our ongoing programming challenges because kids today are so busy. What we do is we try to offer our program close to the time when the school is offering its human growth and development curriculum, which is typically around January, February. And we sort of build it. It's offered on weekends. So we do a weekend for grade 7, for grade 8, for grade 9. And then we sort of try to plan around school sports and plays and sort of what's going on in the community, or if there's a big church thing that everybody's going to. So the weekends when we hold it are kind of varied based on the availability of our instructors, but really based on the availability of our students as well. I know there was one year we had to sort of plan around Super Bowl weekend. We hold it. We have been holding it in our local police station, which has a large meeting room. So it's sort of a large public neutral area where we can get everybody together in a group and have them sort of moving around and doing activities. So that's sort of our basic function. And then we kind of, a lot of our marketing and advertising is by our sort of our webpage, word of mouth. We've have had whole groups of siblings that have gone together in different years. So that's sort of the way that we have been handling it in the past.
We're talking with Anne Brusowski, who is a reproductive and sexual health resource specialist for decades, Tricia Wessel, developmental psychologist on the faculty of UW Milwaukee. They're with us on sex education, the REAL program that they instruct in Cedarburg. Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more conversation on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. sex education programming, it varies widely nationwide. And here in Wisconsin, it's a local control issue. We're discussing the future of reproductive and health curriculum on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 39 states and D.C. mandate sex education and or HIV education. That is the latest tally this month by the Guttmacher Institute, the Sexual and Reproductive Health Research Group. Join in how your school district approaches human growth and development topics. 800-642-1234. Ann Brasowski is on the State Education Department's Adolescent Sexual Health Leadership Committee. Tricia Wessel, a developmental psychologist, associate professor at UW-Milwaukee. They both work on a program called REAL in Cedarburg. They're with us for the hour. Tricia, you know, so much focus is about the sex education, but there are other topics about, you know, body positivity and body awareness and learning not to judge your peers' development. Can these topics perhaps take a back seat when so much is focused on reproduction and contraceptives?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the real assets of the program that we run, is that we go out of our way not only to be comprehensive and medically accurate, but we are very developmentally appropriate, you know, making sure that as our students age, the topics become more complex and match their growth. So like you were saying, there are other aspects to it, such as healthy and unhealthy relationships, which we cover a lot in ninth grade, as they are starting to actually pursue some of these relationships. And it's important that we give them the context with which to make these decisions. It's not just about having or not having sex. It's about making sure that you understand your options and that you understand healthy ways to consider being in any kind of relationship.
And what comes up for you as you look at the context and the topics covered, that there is so much than just about sex itself?
Well, I think when people tend to hear sex ed, sometimes they think of sex and sexuality within that very narrow construct. So maybe how reproduction happens, what parts go where, when really, you know, we're all sexual beings from the time we're born till the time we die. And, you know, it's how we relate with other people, how we view ourselves. Like you were saying, self-esteem, body image, knowledge, information, identity, there's so many things that play into this. And one of the things that we have really seen with our program as we've been doing it is our kids have been getting more sophisticated too. So have been sort of marveling about the questions that we got in our program 10 years ago are not the questions we're getting today, which today we're getting a lot of questions about relationships and identity and how do I navigate some of these really big things. So that's why we sort of see it as kind of a building block program. It's more than just knowing things. It's sort of integrating that into your own values and your beliefs and your ideas and being able to communicate what you want and what you believe to other people as well.
Oh, that's interesting. And I would imagine, too, over that decade, those dozen years or so, you know, the social media becoming such a huge aspect of teens' lives now and what they're seeing and hearing and watching on social media. I would imagine, Tricia, that, too, has had an impact.
Oh, absolutely. And we really go out of our way to try to remain as current as we can. And I will say that that aspect of our program that includes the question box, which is a box in the room that we encourage the students to use throughout the program, and that they can ask any question they want to. And at that point, it is completely anonymous because it's just written on a piece of paper. But of course, they can also just raise their hands, and many of them do that too. Those questions, you know, really bring in some, you know, more emotionally charged, you know, questions or information. And it can relate to social media. It can just relate to a lot of the questions that they have going on in their school at the time in terms of relationships and how kids relate to one another. So yes, there is a lot for young adults these days to have to deal with and figure and navigate how to get through this world, because it's not just, you know, passing notes anymore. It's anything and everything that they do or take a picture of, you know, ends up out there on social media. And it does present a lot of challenges for them in terms of their relationships and their friendships.
I wonder, and, you know, over the years, you've seen so many schools teaching sex ed in single gender classroom setups, you know, probably, I would imagine, with different content. Should boys and girls be taught together? What is your take on that?
I think it's important for all genders to be together, just because we, you know, we sort of don't live in isolated ways. You know, we live with each other, and it's important to know not only how our bodies work, but how the bodies of the people around us work as well. And some of the dialogue that happens when folks are together and in a space is really helpful. And people can say, I see it this way. And other people can say, well, I've never really thought about that before, because I've never had a conversation like this. So I think it's a really, really valuable way to sort of normalize the conversation, to get people comfortable talking about it. We start at a fairly young age, and we're assuming that the majority of folks in our program are not sexually active at the time that they start the program, which is when we really want to get them talking to each other and really advocating for their own needs and sort of understanding that everybody has needs, because the conversation can get much harder as you get older, as Tricia sort of pointed out. And so if we can just sort of normalize these conversations earlier, they'll hopefully be conversations that they feel comfortable having for their whole lives.
Tricia, what would you tell districts that do split up classes for human growth and development?
Well, I think that they're, what they wouldn't be doing that ours does is they would not be inclusive, in the sense that we also know that a lot of people do not identify in that binary, you know, aspect of gender. And so by forcing children to choose, you know, which program they would go into based on the male, you know, female gender component, really could limit some of our young people and really make them feel more isolated or marginalized. So one of the things I love about our program is that we do our best. You know, we are learning every year as we go through this, how to be more trauma-informed, how to be more inclusive and more sex positive with our programming. And I think it's absolutely critical that you have all the children there together. What we find to be most important, though, is that we be developmentally appropriate. So I think it is important to have seventh graders together, to have eighth graders together, and to have ninth graders together. I'm not a big advocate of, you know, unless we have to put them all in one program at that time, because I think developmentally, that's where instructors need to focus their content on.
Tricia Wessel there and Brasowski, they're working on a program called REAL in the Cedarburg area, teaching teens and sexual education. You can join in 800-642-1234. So, Anne, you've seen teen birth rates have been declining nationally for decades. Why do you think that's been happening?
I think that it is due in large part to really, really effective methods of birth control. We now have birth control methods that are pretty much goof-proof. They're not something you need to remember every day. They are long-acting, so you can get a device placed or use a method that can last, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years through your entire high school and college life, if you want them to, and beyond that, until you are ready to start a family. I think one of our arguments for sex education is that those methods don't protect people against sexually transmitted infections. And we have seen an exponential rise in sexually transmitted infections. So it's not that people are being less sexually active. It is that they're using more effective forms of birth control.
Tricia, what's your take on that? And how successful is abstinence-only sex education in reducing teen pregnancy?
Well, if you look to, you know, several areas of research, we do find that, you know, abstinence-only, or this kind of aspect of saying, you're going to sign some kind of a pledge, you know, indicating that you are never going to have sex until you are married. Again, kind of marginalizes a lot of the population because not everyone gets married to begin with. It really is not been found to be as effective. When you have, what the research has shown is that when you have programs that are comprehensive, so again, basically, you know, the discussions can begin anywhere from, you know, developmentally from kindergarten all the way throughout our life. And we focus on the entire, the body, the mind, the heart, the three domains are physical, cognitive, and socio-emotional development. That then gives young people all the information they need in terms of medically accurate contraception. It gives them scientifically accurate STI information so that they know what risks they have out there. And then we also make sure that we're educating them in a comprehensive way in terms of relationships and communication, so that at any point, if they are faced with this possibility of being sexually active, it is our best intentions that these young people will now have education. They'll have information to make these decisions.
Tricia Wessel there, Ann Brasowski. We'll pick this up on sex ed and sexual health in schools. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the future of health education in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Oconomowoc Area School District School Board is under pressure from a parent about books that were allegedly accessible on student laptops that reference sexual orientation and gender identity issues without parental consent. Wausau School Board, they recently revised their human and growth development policy after an outcry for not providing instruction on contraceptives. Join in on how your district is confronting its health curriculum, 800-642-1234. Ann Brasowski and Tricia Wessel, they're part of a program providing sexual health education in Cedarburg, and they're with us for the hour. Let's bring in Jennifer in Cedarburg. Jennifer, hi. What would you like to say about the REAL program?
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to thank Ann and Tricia so much for, you know, bringing this program to light and what we've been doing in Cedarburg with this program for so many years, unfortunately now. My daughter was in the very first group of the REAL HD&D program, and so I kind of went through and watched this all go down when the school board chose the choosing the best program that they're using right now. And I have to tell you, you know, going through it, I've, you know, having read through all of the materials in detail, you know, how damaging it really is to the kids in our schools. And, you know, I'm the first to say in Cedarburg, we really do have excellent schools. However, on this issue, our school board, for whatever the reason, just really, I don't believe is looking out for the best interest of our kids. And, you know, my children who have both gone through the REAL program and have friends who have gone through both programs, you know, can tell you that, you know, the kids who take the school board or the school district program in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade really are completely disconnected. You know, they're bored, they're getting nothing out of it, and they certainly aren't getting what the kids who are taking the REAL program are getting, which is, you know, that ability to talk about these issues. I think what we need to realize is that our youth, they're exposed, whether we know it or not, to all kinds of information. And having that forum in which they can raise questions and talk and get questions answered and think things through as they grow is super important, not only for when they're in maybe middle school or high school, but, you know, as they go on to college, where they are going to be confronted with these things.
Jennifer, thank you for calling in with those very personal reflections on your daughter going through the program. And you have kids who have attended both programs as well. What did they tell you as they compare contrast?
Yeah, so we have the ability in Cedarburg to opt our children out of the school district program. And unfortunately, I don't know that many people realize that they actually can opt their children out. My children, after, you know, family discussion, we decided to opt out of the school district program. My daughter did take it in ninth grade. And she, that year when she did take it, you know, we had conversations each day after class about what they talked about, you know, to make sure that, you know, she was getting correct and accurate information. And she was amazed at how some of the activities kind of made her feel sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe sort of stupid, you know, or embarrassed at how she didn't quite get something right, or and how everybody in the class just sort of looked at the topic like, you know, this is, I can't believe we're here and I can't believe we're doing this. It seems like it's something that the kids just kind of have to
get through.
Thank you. Right. And they're not even allowed to really ask any questions, and it just doesn't feel right to them because teachers are supposed to be reading, you know, from scripts and not really having that classroom discussion like, you know, kids are used to and should have available to them.
Tricia, what do you think, and what comes up for you in terms of the opt-in, opt-out, and what Jennifer has found through the REAL program?
Well, again, the way that they frame that is really unfortunate. And when you run programs within school districts that are comprehensive and medically accurate, and you just have the, you know, kind of default is that everyone will get the programming, then it can be, you know, a very useful reality because, you know, most parents aren't often paying all that much attention to the exact curriculum that's going on. And so that can be a little bit harmful to indicate that parents have to actually opt into some of these types of programs. It also just depends on what's being used in the district. And so like in our case, the Cedarburg School District has, you know, picked more of a, you know, purity-based program that really uses a lot of shame, guilt, and judgment to kind of deter teenagers from sexual activity. So I guess our biggest concern really is that, you know, you have this program, like as Jennifer was saying, that makes children feel uncomfortable. It truly portrays, you know, any intimate contact outside of marriage as dirty, harmful, and shameful. So again, we wanted to make sure, like we said, you know, early on in the hour, that we were very comprehensive in our approach, very medically accurate. Of course, we always want to be developmentally appropriate. I think that that's, you know, a service that I bring to the table. But then we're also inclusive and sex positive. It's not important, or it is very important, that we be very sex positive, that this is a very normal component of growing up and being an adult or being a young adult. And we don't want children to feel that they need to feel guilty or shameful about any of these feelings or questions that they might have.
Anne had mentioned unpacking the topic that their daughter had in class with health, and making sure that, you know, just trying to understand what was discussed and how it was discussed. What role and responsibility, Tricia, do parents have in providing sex education?
Well, that's a tricky area. We would love that, you know, to have every parent out there feel comfortable talking about their children, you know, talking to their children about their human growth and development. But we know that that's not the case. And that's why, you know, again, we also know that not every parent is going to, you know, give their children K-12 education. So we look to educators to do that. So we hope to fit that role. But what we often do is we provide a lot of materials through our website, which, you know, people can go to our Real HGND website or our Facebook page, that give links to different questions and different ways to talk with your children. One of the things that our pediatrician that we've worked with for years, also as an educator, always recommended was that if you want to have these conversations with your children, one way to do this is to talk to them while you're in the car. You're basically kind of trapped in that environment and nobody can escape. So you can kind of try to talk to them, but they also are not face to face with you. You are having to, you know, look forward on the road. And so nobody has to look at each other. And what we find is that, you know, parents and children tend to be a little uncomfortable about these topics. So again, like Anne said, the beginning of the hour, we are really working to normalize this conversation. We start in seventh grade and really just try to get them comfortable with talking about their body, talking, answering all these questions. They will put questions in the question box that they think, you know, are going to embarrass us or they're going to trick us in some way. And then we just approach it in a very normal, calm fashion. And you see these looks on their faces like, oh, okay, this isn't a silly thing to talk about, or they're not embarrassed, so I'm not going to be embarrassed either. So we really do try to normalize this, get them so comfortable with talking to each other and talking about this that we hope that as they go forward, they will be very good at communicating with their partners.
Tricia Wessel here, Anne Brosowski, and they're with the Responsibly Educating Adolescents for Life, the REAL program in Cedarburg, instructors on sexual health. You can join in 800-642-1234. Kenna is joining us from Cedarburg. Kenna, hi. What would you like to bring up?
I was just calling to say I went through the REAL HND program in seventh, eighth, and ninth grade. And I just appreciated like how comfortable of an environment it was, how open they were to answering any questions. And I had some friends in the school district who took the HGND class at the school. And, you know, they were saying how it was kind of based around shame, around having sex. So I just really appreciated that I was able to get a real education, you know, on HGND and topics that are so important.
Kenna, how do you and your friends discuss this type of education? I mean, did it kind of, I wonder if it developed any type of rift where students who were really focused on making sure that they got the school education versus the real program education?
Yeah, obviously it was a little bit of a touchy subject just to bring up in general, like around my friends, but we were all pretty open about it. And, you know, I think we didn't put too much emphasis on like if they were going to, you know, health class at school and I was opted out. And I also had a lot of friends who did the program as well on the weekend. So it was kind of a common area that we talked about together.
How did you feel about doing this on weekends?
Honestly, I didn't mind it at all. I thought it was, I don't know if this sounds kind of odd, but I thought it was kind of fun because I was surrounded by a lot of my friends. And you know, from my perspective in seventh grade, there were snacks, like there was free food, pizza. And I just, again, felt incredibly comfortable in the environment. And the leaders were, you know, funny and they let us talk in between and take breaks. So I thought, yeah, I didn't mind doing it on the weekends at all.
Kenna, really appreciate you calling in with your perspective. Thank you. Well, Anne, it sounds like Kenna had some really good takeaways, but just being in the company of their friends was also really important.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And I think that's part of what starts to make people more comfortable sometimes is they sort of see like, oh, everybody has these questions. And you know, for us, it's really okay when we get that response where like people laugh and they giggle and they're embarrassed. And we really encourage that because it gets them really engaged in materials. And I think sometimes there is this tendency when we see sex ed in schools where teachers like to sort of cut that out and say, you know, you're not being respectful. You have to learn this. It's really important. And then it becomes sort of less impactful and less engaging and people just sort of tune out. And this really, we really stress getting people involved and moving around and talking and doing activities and skills building. And I think that that's one of the things too, that makes our program really successful. As well as Tricia was pointing out, I really feel like the value of just answering every question that comes in a very matter of fact way is really a way of validating everybody's questions.
This is also just coming to me now, but you also have time on your side, whereas, you know, the school day is so regimented with other things that have to be learned. To be able to just unpack, you know, on a weekend, you really don't have those types of constraints, you know, as a school day would.
Well, I will say there are benefits in that we have them for a longer chunk of time. On the other hand, we only have them for 1 weekend a year. And, you know, there's such a large body of evidence out there that points out that for sex education to be really effective, it needs to be ongoing. It can't be like a one and done sort of thing. In school, it's covered at least over in our school district over a period of at least 2 weeks. So there's sort of that time to go home and sort of process what you've heard maybe and come back. And we don't really have that luxury just because we are a volunteer run program and our kids are so pulled in different ways. So that's part of why we would really like to see our school district kind of reevaluate the curriculum they've chosen. And it needs to be integrated. Those messages need to be integrated throughout school, you know, and so people are hearing them from teachers, from their peers, from their parents, and they're getting information from all around them rather than this sort of one and done targeted approach. I mean, what we're doing is we think of it as sort of like a patch up job. It's not the whole thing. Like just because you went through the real HD&D program, it doesn't mean you're done with your sex ed. This is just like the seed planting. This is going to be a process that lasts your whole life.
Anne Brusowski with us has been a reproductive and sexual health resource specialist for decades. Tricia Wessel, a developmental psychologist on the faculty of UW-Milwaukee. They're with us on sex education, school policies, they take in Cedarburg, and still time to talk about where we go from here. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up our conversation on how school districts approach human growth and development policy. Sex education curriculum is a local district decision. We're talking with educators in a program for teens in Cedarburg outside of school. It's called REAL, Responsibly Educating Adults for Life. Their program site says sexual health is not just about sex. It's about teaching the facts about their bodies, healthy relationships, how to make good choices. REAL's seminar leaders are Anne Brusowski and Tricia Wessel. They're with us for about 7 more minutes. Let's bring in Diane now in Tomahawk. Diane, what would you like to bring up?
Hi. Thanks, Anne and Tricia. Bullying in school is vicious and widespread. And my question for you is, within this curriculum, what's your experience in creating safe spaces, particularly for non-binary identified kids and handling bullying when it comes up? And this is especially important if your curriculum becomes more widely adopted.
Diane, thank you. Tricia, you first.
Yes, that's a great question. It's a very unfortunate reality that exists within, I think, all of our school districts. And we know that our individuals in our like LGBTQ environment are much more likely to be bullied. We do our best to, like I said, be as inclusive in our education as possible. When questions like that come up or when students share that information with us, we work as well as we can with all of them to try to make sure that we give them, you know, ways to think about this, ways to talk to one another. One of our biggest aspects would be to teach them how to advocate for one another, and to try to do that in a way that protects them as the advocate and protects the person who's being bullied. Because that is, you know, of course, what many young people and even adults are not willing to take that chance to put themselves out there sometimes to advocate on behalf of another person because they hear something that they know is making someone else feel bad or feel uncomfortable, but they don't always want to take the chance to, you know, risk that themselves. So we really do work with them in terms of communication and trying to give them words and language and that confidence to advocate on behalf of another student.
And anything you want to add there on creating safe spaces and being an ally in these types of conversations?
Yeah, I think we do a lot of sort of role modeling as well by the language that we use. We do not sort of gender body parts. We do not assume the types of relationships that people might be in. We don't assume what folks' identities are. And we have had folks come out of our program and say, thank you for acknowledging me. This was a program where you actually saw me and my needs. And it's the first time I've ever sort of heard that in a public space. I think it's really, really important for us to kind of talk about the range of identities and, again, values and beliefs and what that means, and for people to talk with each other so they can understand that. And one of the limitations, honestly, of our program is that we only reach a small fraction of kids. This is not a conversation that is happening in schools. The fact that this is a conversation that is happening outside of school and parents have to seek it out if this is the education that they want their kids to hear, that's what I believe is problematic. And we have had in our district, we've had an experience of parents actually opting out of the school's curriculum, which doesn't talk about different identities. It doesn't talk about sexual orientation. It really only talks about the value of sex inside marriage. And if you have sex outside of marriage and then later get together with somebody, it's like handing them, you know, you're like a piece of used gum. And why would you want to give that to your future husband? It doesn't acknowledge different identities, or that people for a long time didn't even have the option to have a married relationship depending on their identity. So I think, again, that's a very nuanced discussion. And I think bullying needs to be handled, again, at a district level. And it's hard to do that. It's hard to reach that many kids with that message.
We're getting short on time, and I'm just wondering, where does this program go from here? How do you measure success, and what does the future hold for the REAL program? Anne, you first.
I think some of my markers of success have been that people have sort of found me, or found even people that they think might be related to me, and say, oh, do you know that person who taught that great sex ed class? That really meant a lot to me. I would say in my ideal world, what I want to be is not teaching this class. I don't want to have to offer it in order for people to get this education. Hmm. I want this to be handled at the school district level and have this opportunity available for all students, regardless of the involvement of their parents, so that they are all getting the same information. That is age appropriate, sex positive, really inclusive of different orientations, different identities, and is really trauma informed. It doesn't shame and stigmatize folks who have experienced sexually transmitted infections, sometimes through no fault of their own.
Well, Anne and Tricia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Anne Brusowski and Tricia Wessel, they are instructors for a Cedarburg program. It's called REAL, an acronym for Responsibly Educating Adults for Life. We have a link to the program at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.